Hey everybody, it's Klaatu, and in this episode, I just kind of wanted to chat a little bit about commands, new and old. Something has occurred to me lately, and that is how difficult it is sometimes to get rid of a command. And I don't mean literally, like you can uninstall a command, that's easy. I mean culturally, if you will. So first of all, just in case you're relatively new to this show, yes, lately I have been going through every single package on a Slackware install disk. Gonna continue that next episode. This episode, I just kind of wanted to take a break and kind of sit back and talk about this idea of a traditional command. This has occurred to me lately, for whatever reason. I've just kind of noticed that there are some commands that you hear about one day, you hear about them having been deprecated. Although, I guess if we go linearly, first of all, you hear about the command. You learn about the command from some place. And then later, you hear that that command has been deprecated. And then 5, 7, 9 years go by, and you think, that command has been deprecated. Wait a minute, why is it still on every Linux box I sit in front of? And there are quite a few examples of this that I can think of off the top of my head. There's netstat, for instance, which gives you a list of ports and sockets that are active on your system. There's ifconfig, which gives you a list of all of your network interfaces, that's the word I was talking about. Telnet, which talks to ports on other systems or on your own system if you need to test a port somewhere. Those are the ones that came immediately to mind that I've been noticing lately. I'm sure there are others, like, I mean, heck, apt-get, it's not a command anymore. I mean, it is, but it's not really. It's just apt now. You just type in apt space install. You don't have to do apt-get install. Yum instead of DNF, or rather DNF instead of yum. Things like that, they exist. We hear about them, or we learn about them, and then we hear at some point that they're deprecated. And I mean, in the case of netstat, which I guess that must be the one that really made me start thinking about this for whatever reason. If you do a man netstat, pretty early in the manual page, in the man page, after all the options are listed, which, I mean, to be honest, there are lots of options. Like, the synopsis of options is a good half a screen full. So after all that, in the notes section, it says very clearly, this program is mostly obsolete. Replacement for netstat is SS. Replacement for netstat-r is IP root. Replacement for route. Replacement for netstat-i is IP-s link. Replacement for netstat-g is IP matter, MADDR. So, I mean, the man page tells you it's obsolete. It tells you right there in the place where you would go to reference it that you, I guess, shouldn't be using the command. Although, how can you take that seriously if it's still on your system? And that's kind of one of the questions, one of the angles here that I want to think about and talk over. So I figure the problem, or the phenomenon, maybe, because maybe it's not a problem. I don't think it's necessarily a problem, but it is a thing that I have noticed. So it is a phenomenon. There are commands that people get used to. At some point, the commands decide that they're no longer useful for whatever reason. And then we all continue to use them anyway. Or we use an unholy mix of the old command and the new command. I don't really use ifconfig anymore, but for a very long while, I was using IP for one set of tasks, and ifconfig for that quick list of internet interface, your list of network interface cards, so devices, whatever, cards, NICs, network interface card, yeah. And it wasn't because IPAS. I mean, that's literally how short you can make that. It's IP space A space S. That will resolve to IP address show IP space S dash A, or A space S. That's fewer characters, I think. IP space A space S. That's 6 if config. Yeah, that's fewer characters than if config. It does this basically the same thing, almost exactly the same thing. So it wasn't that the command was too sort of complex, or that you had to do a bunch of weird, jump through weird hoops to get to the same result. It was just pure muscle memory, or maybe a combination of impulse and muscle memory, you know, because there is that millisecond between your brain thinking, oh, I need a list of my nicks, and then actually typing in a command. And if in that millisecond, your brain has already preloaded if config into it, then that's what's going to get typed. So there's something kind of deep within your thinking that you have to sort of reset if you want. If you want to use the new command, you have to reset that impulse so that when you think I need a list I need to do a task, well, that thing needs to be loaded as the thing that you're going to type, so that it can kind of override what your fingers are used to doing at that impulse. So in other words, I'm saying that one of the hurdles a new command has to get over in order to take over the old command is just force of habit. It's just muscle memory or impulse control. It's just it needs to get over that, which is difficult. And I think in a way, it has to be a very conscious choice. And so if the command remains available on a system, I think there's a very high probability that that command will continue to be used, whether the command itself wants to be used or not. Whether the person, the user, you and me, want to use that command or not, it's going to get used. At some point in this show, in this podcast, I removed the command less from my system. I don't remember when it was, but I vaguely remember actually doing it. You know, I remember that that was a thing that I decided to do, and it might have been back. No, I don't think it would have been that far back. I talked about less in episode 1246. I talked about less in episode 1217. So 1246, maybe. Yeah, maybe. So I mean, that was like over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. I don't remember when I switched to the just straight number episode format. But it was a while ago, right? I removed less from my system. I'd resolved to just use most instead. I don't love more for everything, but I just wanted to try something different most. And so I removed less from my system. And I swear, just last month, I piped something to less and was genuinely surprised that less wasn't on my system. Couldn't understand how it wasn't on my system. So not only had I forgotten that I'd resolved not to use less, I'd also forgotten that I'd resolved not to use less so firmly that I removed it from my system. Now, to be honest, it's not really unusual for me to forget something like that. That's how my memory works. That's fine. That's not that unexpected. But I'm just saying, I've been using most on this Slackware desktop for over a year, and I'm still not quite used to it. And frankly, I'm not really sold on most yet, to be honest. I mean, it's nice. It works. I'm not sure that I prefer. I think less might be the pager of choice, to be honest. So maybe there's something about the way certain commands and how they work that, for whatever reason, in real life, it's just we just feel like it's better. So for instance, with netstat might be one of the worst examples, or best examples. But I mean, that one paragraph that I read you. This program is mostly obsolete. Well, what does mostly obsolete mean? And then it lists 4 different replacements for different aspects of netstat. So netstat, the replacement is SS. Okay, so replacement for SS. It's another utility to investigate sockets. That's what it advertises itself as. It seems to have a bunch of options. Seems like it's probably pretty reasonable. But then netstat says that the replacement for netstat-r specifically is IP route, or root. And then that netstat-i is IP-s link. And netstat-g is IPMADDR. So the -g is for groups, the -s or not dash S, the dash I is for interface, a table of network interfaces. Dash R, of course, is for the routing table. So why are those listed? So I think in a way, I mean, it might just be that, hey, these are other options that you might need to get the information. Or it might be, well, you can't do this with SS, so use this instead. So in other words, SS, the replacement, or IP, the replacement for netstat, is not a drop-in replacement. Now, for ifconfig, I'm trying to think of anything that ifconfig can do that, for instance, IP can't. And I can't think of anything personally. I could be incorrect about that, though. I could be overlooking something in ifconfig that someone uses all the time that just IP just cannot do. So I could be wrong about that. But, you know, if you talk to people, they tell you, and I don't know who they is, and I don't know who these people are, but they'll all tell you that ifconfig is deprecated and that IP is the thing that you should be using. And yet, I haven't really come across a system so far, I don't think, that doesn't have ifconfig. And then you have to kind of ask yourself, well, why would we still have ifconfig then? Why wouldn't we just write a little shell script or something, or have it in every .bashrc file or something where when you type in the string ifconfig, why doesn't it just symlink itself essentially to IP dash adder show, IP ADDR space show? Why wouldn't that be the thing? Because that ifconfig with no arguments lists all of your interface cards. So, or I should say interfaces, because it could be virtual interfaces. And so does IP AS, so why not just have that sort of as a drop? That part would be a drop-in replacement. I imagine there are mappings like that all over the place. Why wouldn't there be like a shim, essentially, or a translator that would just forward a request onto ifconfig? And I think I know the answer to that. And I think the answer is because then people don't realize that they're not running ifconfig. And then they're filing bugs against ifconfig in theory, or they're complaining about ifconfig, when really what they're complaining about is the resolution to that command as IP space A space S or whatever. So I'm assuming that that's why we don't do those things, which I think there's a corollary to this, to all of this. There's a corollary, which is, why are the namespaces, as it were, of commands, or I should say of tasks, occupied by specific commands? And I don't want to get off track and talk about that yet, so put a pin in that. We're going to come back to it probably after the coffee break. Okay, so I think, to recap, first of all, we've got force of habit that we're overcoming. Second of all, we've got the fact that not everything that you do with the new commands is an exact duplication of the old command, which kind of makes sense. I mean, this is the same thing. Oh, but okay, so before I go into that again, though, and also just because they're there, right? And if you type in a thing that you're used to because of force of habit and it works, then there's no incentive for you to switch. Now, even if you want to switch, though, sometimes there's not an exact mapping. You can't just say, okay, instead of ifconfig, I'll type in the word IP, and then this, and then that, and then it'll all work. Or, you know, maybe netstat would be the better example there. Netstat dash, what was it, G? Well, there is, you know, SS doesn't do that, apparently, I guess. So you have to do IPMADDR. Okay, great. So there's not this exact one-to-one drop-in replacement, which is problematic because, I mean, think of all the scripts out there that have been written, not for IP, but for ifconfig. You can't just go through there and do a sed ifconfig IP and be done with it. Like, that won't work. You can't just swap out the command. There's a whole, you know, there are all these different sort of forks in the road that you may or may not have to follow depending on what you're trying to do. I think that's a difficulty in a lot of different senses. Number one, you have to find out what those alternates are, right? So if you've heard netstat deprecated SS, and then you can't figure out how to get that group listing with SS, and then you realize, oh, apparently that doesn't work. Although, honestly, I haven't actually confirmed that that doesn't work. But according to the man page of netstat, you're supposed to be using IP-G to get that. So I guess it must not work with SS, or if it does, then it's a different option, and it must be different enough for someone to mention, hey, you can do this also with IP. So I think that's a difficult thing, not only for the brain, the human brain, to process and to discover, and it is hard to discover, and it's hard for you to adjust your scripts. And I think, you know, if you're kind of new-ish to Linux, or if you're new-ish to Linux administration, then I think you may not know just how entrenched a couple of scripts can get into an environment. If you were to remove a command like ifconfig, let's say, you don't really know what's going to break. Like, how many of your scripts relied on the output, probably heavily parsed and very specifically parsed, but how many of your scripts that are, you know, making sure that there's a fallback connection, or that you're able to find the right virtual machine running on some server, how many of your scripts rely on ifconfig? I don't know, but if that's out there, then you're going to have to go adjust all of those things. And not all of those things, as I said, will just be a quick find and replace. It's sometimes a bigger deal than that. And that takes maintenance. So why would you do that if config is still on the system? And I think that's also kind of, that speaks to the expectation of, do we really expect users to drop what they're doing in their daily life to all of a sudden essentially relearn a bunch of stuff that they had down 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago? Do they really need to stop and learn the new command? Or if the old command has been working all this time and continues to work today, why make that investment? And again, I want to reiterate, I'm not necessarily saying any of this is a bad thing. I'm just analyzing why it seems to be difficult to get away from a command. Maybe it's not a bad thing that it's difficult to get away from a command. In fact, I think there's a very valid and significant argument that it's a good thing that you can't get away from a command, that you don't have to get away from a command, that command lulls you into decades, literal decades of reliance. Like, you just can't say that about other operating systems. You honestly can't. Like, I don't know of anything on any other operating system, not that I'm qualified to speak on that. I've been using Linux for well over a decade, almost two decades now. I've been using Linux exclusively at work, at home. That's all I know at this point. So, but in my limited experience then, in my past experience, I can't think of anything that I could rely on to be unchanged for longer than a release cycle, which granted, you know, it could be, release cycles used to be quite long, actually. I mean, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years until the next major release of an OS. A lot of people didn't even get a new OS. They just got the new computer. And you try to make those traditionally last for as long as they can. So after that, though, you kind of expect that everything's changed. And generally, for a desktop user, that's fine. That's okay that everything changes. You don't have customized scripts running special services that hundreds or thousands or what, however many number of people are relying on them. It's not a big deal. Linux obviously has a lot of sort of different expectations around that. And so I think it's a good thing that we can say that ifconfig continues to function as expected today, just like it did back in 2006-ish when I got into Linux. I mean, that's a huge deal. That's a really big deal. And that's a lot to overcome for a new command, because when you have a command as a user, you've got a command that you know you love. Maybe you don't even love it. Maybe you just know it, but you know that you can count on it. It's reliable. A new command comes along. How many years does it take for that new command to supplant the trust that you had in the old command? For instance, avconv. Avconv came out, I don't remember when now, it must have been, what, 2010-ish, maybe 2012 or 11, something, I would say around that time. And it was a fork from FFmpeg. Of course it would be, right? That's all I ever talk about, FFmpeg. But, I mean, FFmpeg, that's a command I trust, I've known longer than I have known about Linux. That's how long I've been using FFmpeg. FFmpeg was the command that sort of opened up the gates to open source. So I shouldn't even say before I knew about Linux. It's before I even understood what open source was, I knew FFmpeg. And I was running FFmpeg. There was a, I've told this story before, I'm going to tell it really quickly now, just in case you're kind of newish, haven't heard this one. There was a GUI front end to FFmpeg, and I was using, I tried to use that for a while, and that got me into video conversion. And then I discovered, through poking around, that you could dig into the package that was this graphical user interface. You could dig into it and get the binary, the compiled binary of just the FFmpeg command. And so I started using FFmpeg from a terminal on Mac OS X to convert video for people for money, which at the time I really, really badly needed. So I was doing terminal-based video conversion with this FFmpeg command that nobody knew about, nobody knew how to use because it was in a terminal, and the GUI, frankly, was completely indecipherable. You could not, it tried its best, I bet, to try to make it comprehensible. It was incomprehensible. It was not easy to use. And that was great. And that's how I got started down the path of like, okay, well, let's find out more about a terminal. Let's learn what kind of power that brings. And that led me, of course, to Emacs, well, to Tetris in Emacs. Emacs led me to the GPL, and that led me to Linux. So FFmpeg, trusted, reliable, very, very much for me. AVConf came out. And the first thing I thought was, well, you're going to have to demonstrate to me that this is an application that I can trust. Because FFmpeg, I have a lot of trust in. I will admit, FFmpeg changing the options and changing the different, the way that it works sometimes, it can get frustrating. So it's not a super consistent command all the time. But it is a command that I know how it works, and I trust it, and I felt like it was very reliable. And it was a command that I just never felt would go away. I just felt like it was a project that was going to continue. And AVConf, as exciting or not exciting as it was, I don't know anything about it yet. I don't know anything about the people doing the project. I mean, I don't know anything about the people doing FFmpeg either, to be fair. But I guess because this is the only place it works, but within open source, it's relatively easy to fork a project. I mean, you go to a repository, you make a copy of the code, and you put it into your own repository. You get a little bit of internet press coverage on it, or a lot bit of internet press coverage, and all of a sudden everybody's talking about it. Potentially a distribution might even change default to your command instead of the old command if you get enough sort of drum up support, and then you're off. You're up and running. Does it last? That's another question. And that's, you know, within computing, that's, especially within Linux and open source for me, that's a really important component of whether I want to switch to something. Another example from sort of my bubble of a world, GIMP. It got forked about 2 years ago. You might not have even heard of this one. It was called Glimpse. Good little acronym, I think. I forget what it was for, but Glimpse. There was, I think, even a book came out on Glimpse 1.0 or something like that. So it was essentially GIMP. I think they decided that they wanted to default to the, I want to say, Photoshop keyboard shortcuts, I think they had that by default. I could be wrong about that. And they had a whole list of improvements that they were going to do. And not too long ago, it was discontinued. It's no longer an active fork. GIMP, on the other hand, continues to make releases today. Slow and steady, as always, but still, it's still there. And I'm not saying any of this stuff judgmentally. It's very difficult to maintain software. But I am saying that if, on a daily basis, you rely on specific software, then arbitrarily changing from the thing that has been there for you for 20 years, and then changing to something that has just gotten its very first commit last month, that's a huge potential commitment. Especially, as I said, if you have scripts or just reference workflows or architectural patterns based on those things that have been around, again, for 20 years. You can go back and adjust all of those things over the course of the next 2 years, because it's slow going to ensure that it's reliable going forward. It takes a lot of time, a lot of testing, a lot of accounting for edge cases, all that stuff. And then at the end of the 2 years, you might go to update the application you've just adjusted your entire environment for, only to find that it's looking for a new maintainer because all of its current, you know, all of the guys who opened the repository 2 years ago are suddenly too busy to continue, or they've run out of funding, or they just, they're not interested anymore, whatever the scenario might be, however valid it might be. The point is that there's a lot to be said for reliability, kind of a proven, time-tested reliability. And I think that's a non-trivial component of this as well. I think that's a big deal for a lot of people. I mean, I know it's not just me. There's a lot of people in certain industries where it's, you know, the reliability, the time-testedness of it, is not only a luxury of Linux, but it's one of the major selling points of Linux. So I think what I'm saying is that I have noticed that it's hard to replace a command, both in the user's brain and sort of in the tradition of the wider system. And I'm also saying that it's not necessarily a bad thing that it's difficult to replace a command. It might be okay. I think there's probably, I imagine, an edge case, to be honest. But I'll bet there is an edge case out there where it has to happen because, like, the old command no longer compiles. Like, it's just not working anymore. For a while, for me, PDFTK was exactly like that. PDFTK was the command. It depended on libpoplar to do some fancy PDF stuff. And libpoplar at the time wasn't compiling on Fedora, like, 30 or 32 or something like that. It was relatively recently. And so PDFTK just didn't work. Luckily, there was a drop-in replacement command called PDFTK-Java, which compiled and ran fine on Fedora and other platforms. I shouldn't say drop-in. I think there were some features that were not implemented yet in PDFTK-Java that were in PDFTK. It just so happened that none of those features were things that I'd ever used. So for me, it was a drop-in replacement. And I use PDFTK-Java to this day, even though PDFTK, as far as I know, is still around. And certainly libpoplar is back up and running on whatever platform, on Fedora or whatever. Maybe it wasn't libpoplar. Maybe it was something else. It might have been Podofo. One of the two, or something else that I'm not remembering. Some key component of it wasn't working. So in that case, it was a decision. It was a choice. It was, you could have nothing, or you could use PDFTK-Java. And so that was a relatively easy switch for me. It made it, I guess, even easier, given that it was a drop-in replacement, given that it was available while the old one was not. I wasn't sure. I was aware, you know, that PDFTK-Java could evaporate. Like, it hadn't been around as long as PDFTK. I didn't know what the future was going to bring. But again, at the time, because it was a drop-in replacement and it was working, that was a great reason to switch to it. It was one of the easier switches I've ever made, though. That was a simple, direct switch over. Which, I mean, again, like AVConf would have been a switch, an easy switch to make. It was practically feature for feature identical drop-in replacement for FFmpeg for a while, at least. I don't know what its state is now. Haven't checked in on it lately, but it might have diverged by then. But I guess the urgency wasn't there because FFmpeg was still there. So it was, well, why do I need to switch to AVConv if FFmpeg is still available? So I don't know. There are lots of different sort of factors here when trying to determine, I guess, whether you yourself are going to switch to a, you know, sort of an approved quote-unquote command versus an old command. And I don't think any of them ought to be taken lightly. I mean, I think that it needs kind of an objective view. You have to look at your workflow, your environment, your scripts, you know, everything that is sort of important to you on your computer and the things that you do on a daily basis, and decide, does it make sense to move in this direction, or should I just stay the course here until it becomes urgent to switch, or should I start making a slow changeover now? Which that's another option. You know, you don't have to switch over everything today, but you could have both on your system, or you could you could be planning for cross, you know, to be able to switch over at some later date. Like I say, there are a lot of factors. I think you just need to kind of think about them carefully and probably, I guess, identify the times that you're not. So for instance, if config for me for a long time, like I said, was just kind of pre-programmed into my muscle memory and into my impulse. So I would just compulsively type if config when I thought of a specific task. And certainly if I was still using ifconfig to like bring up a network connection and things like that, I don't know how easy the IP switch would have been, because bringing up a connection with IP is actually kind of complex, if I recall correctly. NMCLI kind of makes it easier, but then Network Manager makes everything easier, so maybe that doesn't even count. But ifconfig, I mean, it was a slow changeover for me. I introduced IP commands sort of as I did new and different things that I didn't already have an existing sort of incantation stored for some other command. And then eventually I was able to port the simple stuff with ifconfig over to IP, and now I really haven't touched ifconfig in ages. Couldn't even tell you what system has it, what system doesn't. Maybe my laptop, maybe it doesn't even have ifconfig. I don't know. I would not know. Because I just don't use it anymore. But it's taken a while, but that's true. And I mean, come to think of it, I don't honestly use netstat that much anymore either. I generally use IP for routing tables, but to be honest, yeah, I guess I still use netstat for a quick view sometimes of just some, if I need to check on something. So yeah, maybe that's the answer, a slow changeover. Maybe that's the right answer. Or maybe more realistically, it depends. What doesn't depend on a whole lot is that it is time for a cup of coffee. So stop whatever you're doing. Doesn't matter what you are doing. Just stop and go get a cup of coffee. That's what I'm going to go do. We'll come back, finish up the show. And we're back. I have coffee. You've got coffee because I trust that you did exactly as I said, which was to stop everything and go get coffee. So we all have coffee. And now it's time to talk about what I'm going to just say is a namespace of a task, which none of this, that's not a real thing. I'm coming up with terms that make sense to me. By this, I mean, there are commands on Linux by now that accomplish a specific task. And some of them are super obvious, like cd, you need to change a directory. Sorry, I don't mean that the command itself is obvious, like cd doesn't necessarily obviously mean change directory, but I mean, I don't even know if cd does mean change directory. Maybe it means current directory. Is that what cd stands for? I don't know. There's no man page for cd, so I have literally just no idea what cd stands for. Anyway, I don't mean that the command itself is obvious. I mean that the task is obvious, at least to someone using who's used to using a Linux terminal. You need to change a directory. Obviously, that's a command you're going to need access to. You need to list the files in your current directory. Obviously, that's a command you'll need. You need a command to, I'm all out, actually. Those are the two obvious commands that I can think of. But there are less obvious ones, too. Like, not everyone knows that at some point in your life, you might need to find the process ID of a specific process. Not everyone's going to do that within the first year, even, of them using Linux. Eventually, they might get into that and they might think, oh, well, that's an obvious task that people would need to do. Not everyone realizes that sometimes you just want to see your routing table. I mean, a lot of users will never, ever need to see their routing table. They won't care. They won't need to know such a thing exists. It doesn't matter. And I would love that. I love that that's possible now. I think that's invaluable. But it's still kind of an obvious task that you're going to need at some point. The thing about that, though, is that a long time ago, people who created Unix and then later Linux, all those people first in, first served, they got to create commands that become synonymous to the task. So for instance, listing a network, listing your network interfaces on a system, ifconfig. That's the, if you know it, then that's the obvious choice for that task. You don't think of another command immediately. You think ifconfig, or maybe you don't. Maybe you think IPAS or add or show, whatever. But whatever that command is for you, when you came into Linux and discovered, hey, you can list your interfaces with this command, that command has become the command for that task. And I think as computer users, and maybe as just humans, we tend to think of tasks by the tool that accomplishes that task. And I'm assuming that that's probably true in real life as well. The classic example is that you need to drive a nail into a plank of wood. What does that task make you think of? Most people are going to think a hammer. Now, granted, there are sometimes better options. There are nail guns that you could, you just pneumatic sort of guns that shoot nails. You can drive those through a plank really quickly. In a pinch, if you don't have your pneumatic nail gun, then maybe, and you don't have a hammer, maybe a brick would work, or a rock might be suitable, or a really, really sturdily made camera. I wouldn't recommend that, but there are cameras out there, the old cameras made out of all metal parts, no electronics. Those will drive a nail if you try hard enough and hit the metal part, not the leather part. So we tend to think of sort of like the tool that does the task rather than the task, and then derive what tool we need from that task. Which I think that's an obvious and vital mental shortcut that we all take, because you really don't want to have to reverse engineer everything every single time you go to do the thing. That's not efficient. You just think, I'm going to go build a bookshelf. I'm going to need some hammer. I'm going to need some nails, and I'm going to need a hammer and some planks of wood. You gather those things together and you're good. I'm going to go change a directory in Linux. Well, you're going to type in CD. I'm going to list my interfaces. Well, you're going to type in ifconfig or IPAS, whatever you learned. I think where this becomes problematic is, as I just spent the past half hour discussing, I think there's also a potential problem here, because then what happens is that we stop thinking of the task at all, in a way. I mean, we don't, but in a way we do. We don't think, I'm going to list all my interfaces. We think, I'm going to type in ifconfig now. And in our heads, we know exactly what to expect from that command. And I mean, you can almost hear yourself talking to like a new intern who's starry-eyed and has never seen Linux before, really super eager to learn. And you say, okay, well, first thing we're going to do is type in ifconfig. Why would you say that? They don't know what that means. But I bet if you've ever had that, I bet you've done something like that before. I mean, maybe not to an intern or something, but I mean, I bet you've told someone to do something like that before, and you never thought, or you didn't think immediately, oh, I can't say that to them. They're not going to know what that means. I have to explain the task to them. I mean, I do it all the time. I tell someone, okay, so now just type in CD and downloads and press tab. Well, wait, what does CD mean? Where did we get the word downloads from? And when am I pressing tab? After I've completed the word downloads? Or what? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And then you think, oh, wait a minute. Okay, back up. We're going to change directory into downloads. The command for that is CD, which let's imagine stands for change directory. Wait a minute, let's back up. Do you know what a directory is? Do you know why we need to change to a directory? Well, let's talk about file systems for a moment. And you know, we conflate all this, like this whole world of things into a single command. And then that command from then on becomes synonymous with that great big enormous series of tasks that seems really simple to us. And then when someone says, hey, that command is deprecated, then we think, oh, darn, I need to redefine this world of tasks that command used to make available to me, and figure out what's in that world and what's still there, what's changed. Can I do netstat? Can I just do SS instead of netstat? Or do I need to also remember these other three random IP commands for the edge cases that SS doesn't account for? It's a whole thing. And my question is, why are we doing that? Why wouldn't we instead define commands, like names of commands, and then and define what those commands are expected to do, and then we can put any code into that command namespace that we want. It doesn't matter whether it was written by Linus Torvalds, by Richard Stallman, or by Doug McIlroy, or Brian Kernighan. You know, who doesn't matter who wrote what. It's just that that command exists. Oh yeah, Dennis Ritchie. That was another name I could have probably mentioned there. Just, you know, throw that in there. So it doesn't matter who wrote the code, as long as, you know, the input is what is expected and the output is what is expected. It's essentially a computer-wide function. That's what all of these really super basic commands really are. And then we don't have to worry about whether ifconfig is deprecated or not, because ifconfig is always there. Now, maybe it's been updated with new code that, for whatever reason, is being maintained by someone else, or maybe there have been a bunch of vulnerabilities that have been patched and accounted for, or maybe there's been an adjustment because back when ifconfig was originally written, there was no concept of having virtual connections, but now there's all these tunneled connections and virtual interfaces that we need to account for, all that other stuff. Doesn't matter. Ifconfig is still the thing that we think of and type for the task, you know, for which it is known. And it just, it feels to me, and I could be wrong, I haven't done research into this or anything, but it does feel to me a little bit like we, you know, because of the way computer and open source developed, I feel like it just kind of got, just people got to come in and stake their claim over a certain domain, and there was no review about that later on. And I kind of feel like it doesn't feel very, very, it doesn't feel like great design to say, netstat is going to now be called SS, except in some cases where it's going to be IP-R, IP-I, IP-G. That doesn't feel great to me. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel sensible to me that ifconfig is now all of a sudden IP, and that you can switch to IP and never think about ifconfig again. I mean, did we ever need ifconfig? Well, yeah, we did at the time, but I mean, but now that's just a name that's just out there that's not, like, really getting used, if you know what I mean. Like, if IP is that much better than ifconfig, then why don't we just name IP ifconfig? Then we wouldn't have to have, we wouldn't have to just leave ifconfig sort of floating out there, sort of as this ungraceful sort of ending, dissipating into the void. It's just like, well, we can just use it. We can just keep using that name for the new stuff. And I'm not arguing that we actually do that, because, I mean, IP's scope is larger, is greater than ifconfig. I think there's an argument that that wouldn't be the best way to transition. But, I mean, I'm just wondering whether maybe a little bit more thought about these sort of system-wide functions, essentially, could give greater consistency over the course of, I don't know, the next 50 years. Which, I mean, that's a long time to be thinking about. But, I mean, then again, if you'd said that to the Unix people back in the 70s or whatever, you know, I mean, they might not have designed things quite as well as they did. They designed it for a 50-year lifespan, and it's been great. It's been doing wonderful. So, wonderfully. So why not plan for the next 50 years and this time say, well, okay, we're going to have these names, these function names, we're going to have them defined, and it doesn't matter what kind of thing. And I realize as I'm saying this, you're thinking, yeah, it's called POSIX. Yeah, it's called POSIX. That's what you're talking about, POSIX. I realize that. I know I'm talking about POSIX. So I guess maybe what I'm saying is we need to take POSIX further, I think that kind of system definition is really, really smart, and I think it needs to be extended. I'm not even saying necessarily that everyone needs to agree to that, weirdly. Like, for instance, I'm not saying that video command or video convert command. I'm not saying that the FFmpeg project has to change its name to video convert. I'm just saying, what if there was a function, a system-wide function, a command on all POSIX systems called, I don't know, video convert or whatever, media convert. You know, we could workshop this. And it would probably, for the most part, get FFmpeg, it would be a symlink to FFmpeg, and all the options would probably be FFmpeg. But if someone wanted to change that and say, well, I think we have something better, we have something that'll do more threading, we have something that'll you know, have cleaner results or whatever, not that I think that FFmpeg has any problem with the quality of its results, I actually think it's quite good. Then yeah, they can do that, but all those options would still need to be there. I will say that the FFmpeg options could probably stand to be improved. But again, like I'm just imagining that not a translation layer, but certain expectations could be set and followed. So I think that it could work for a lot of things. And it might seem a little bit silly at first because, yeah, maybe some of them would just be, well, like at this point, let's just use FFmpeg. Because, I mean, come on, media convert, like with all the options of FFmpeg, then we're just using FFmpeg. But think about other things, like my favorite example, which I've probably mentioned a couple of times on this episode, on this podcast, is install. The install command. I to this day, I cannot believe that. I think that's the one that that offends me the most. So install is admittedly, it makes sense. If I do a man install, it says install, copy files and set attributes. And functionally, that's what an install is, right? You're copying commands from one place, you're putting them into another place, and you're making sure that they're set correctly so that they work where they've been placed. Functionally, though, install is drastically underused. I mean, even when we compile from source code, most of us are using something like ./configure make install. And install, by the way, in that context is not the install command. It make install, that is a make, that's a function in make. You're triggering the install function of make. So you're not talking about this command. So this command is sitting on one of the most commonly used keywords for the act of making software appear on your computer, and this command owns it. And all this command is really is a slightly inflated CP command. In fact, so much so that the description of GNU install in the man page says, blah, 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 blah. If you want to download and install a ready-to-use package on a GNU Linux system, you should instead be using a package manager like yum or apt-get, both of which, by the way, are deprecated. Apt-get is not the advised thing. You just use apt. Yum, you don't use yum anymore, you use DNF. Yum is actually symlinked now entirely to DNF, or it loads the DNF Python library or something like that. I forget what exactly, but yeah. So even in the man page, it has to excuse itself for being the phrase, for being the keyword that is the most intuitive thing. And I would give practically anything for install to release its position so that people on Fedora and people on Ubuntu could type in the word install, or rather sudo install foo, and then they would get foo. Now, would they be all using the same application? No. That's what I mean about like the namespace, the system-wide function. They wouldn't be using the same thing. The people on Ubuntu would be using apt on the back end. People on Fedora would be using DNF on the back end. People on SUSE would be using zipper on the back end, and so on. But the command itself to the user would be exactly the same thing. There might be a difference in the package name. I wouldn't mind us actually resolving that difference as well, but the interface would be the same. And that way also, by the way, when Fedora decides and Red Hat and RHEL, CentOS, all those guys decide that they don't want to use yum anymore and would rather use DNF, then there is no need to change the command. It would still just be install. Now, to their credit, you can still type in yum. And again, now you're not actually triggering yum, you're triggering DNF. So that's a lie, but it's a good lie, I think. That's the kind of lie we need to be telling our users. It's don't bother changing all your scripts from 20 years ago. You're still using yum, except you're not, you're using DNF, but the results are going to be the same. It doesn't matter. But why go to that trouble when we could just have system-wide command names? I think there's something to that. I think that could really, really be, I mean, I think I would appreciate that. And I don't know, maybe some people wouldn't. Maybe there are subtleties that I'm not thinking of. It's quite possible. But for me, a well-designed system, I think, would have those persistent, really significant functions or those namespaces for tasks. They would be defined. The inputs and outputs would be very specific. And any distribution and anybody could then load whatever binary they want into that namespace, and off you're off and running. Those are just random thoughts about commands. Hope they've been either informative or thought-provoking for you. Let me know what you think. You can reach me on Mastodon. You can reach me on email. All the details will follow. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.